We are pleased to sit down and talk with Tom Moriarty. So here's a little bit of background about Tom before we get started. Tom began his career as a Coast Guardsman and served as an enlisted machinery technician for 9 years, and he then earned a commission through the Officer Candidate School. Soon thereafter, Tom was selected for the Naval Engineering Technology Program, and he attended Western New England College for 2 years, where he earned a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and also passed the engineering and training exam. Tom's last Coast Guard assignment was as an executive officer at the Naval Engineering Support Unit in Portsmouth, Virginia. Tom earned a professional MBA with focus in organizational development from Florida Institute of Technology and was also selected as the U.S. Coast Guard's 2003 Federal Engineer of the Year, an award sponsored by the National Society of Professional Engineers. Since retiring from the Coast Guard service in 2003, Tom has become a recognized expert in leadership, asset management, engineering, and reliability, and he's also worked with well-known and diverse organizations such as Rio Tinto, Gulfstream Aerospace, the University of Michigan, Miller Coors, the U.S. Army, and many others as well. His services and focuses include asset management assessments, master planning, implementation support, investigative and forensic engineering, productive reliability leadership development, reliability engineering support. And Tom has also written monthly articles and been featured in industry magazines on leadership and management related to industrial and manufacturing workplace applications for the past 10 years. And today we're looking forward to really doing a deep dive with Tom and talking about productive leadership systems. Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
Hi, Paige. I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. So we are going to dive right in. So you've coined the term productive leadership system. So can you explain a little bit more about what this is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wrote a book called The Productive Leadership System, Maximizing Organizational Reliability. And I did that because when you go into organizations and you talk to people, specifically senior leaders, there seems to be a big frustration about when they try to create an initiative and push it down to the shop floor, it's very hard for them to get traction, to get it all the way down to the plant floor. You hear of all of these initiatives that never quite come to fruition or get the results that people expected out of them. And so I started peeling the onion, trying to figure out why that was. And what I did is compared my time in the military services years ago to when I go into corporate environments. And what I found is that it boils down to me to be a problem with accountability. There's a lack of accountability. And so there's a system needed to be created that puts accountability in. And so I call it the productive leadership system because it requires a productive leadership policy, a model that assigns accountability to individual leaders, and I call that the organizational reliability model. And then there needs to be a model that applies to the individual leader, and that's the productive leadership model. And then there needs to be an organized attempt to develop productive leaders. So that's what I call the productive leadership development program. So all four of those elements together create the productive leadership system. It's more than just training people in time management and, you know, communication and giving and receiving feedback. Those are just the tools that you use. It doesn't accommodate. It needs to be accommodated and supported by a system.
Got it. All right. So you mentioned both the organizational reliability model and then the productive leadership model. Why did you develop those models?
Yeah, so and they work hand in glove. So the organizational reliability model applies across each level of leadership. Okay, so if it's a supervisor to a work center team members, or whether it's a plant manager to their direct reports or a mid-level manager to supervisor, across each level of leadership, there's what I refer to as a senior leader and a subordinate leader or team member. And what the model does is it breaks down accountabilities. So on the top half of the model, there are accountabilities for the senior leader to look at strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, to then assess those, prioritize them to determine which ones that the organization is or their organization is going to go after. So there's an assess piece, there's a define piece, which is where you would apply things like Lean Six Sigma, RCM, RCA, different tools to actually define what the response is going to be. And once you define that response and you determine that you're going to go forward with the change, then it becomes an authorized requirement. And the senior leader is still accountable to then implement that authorized requirement. And when I talk about requirements, what I mean specifically is guidance, which is policies, plans, processes, procedures, and measures, and the assets that are required to carry out that guidance. So when the implementation piece, when the authorized requirements go over to implementation, the senior leader is accountable to ensure that those things happen. Once that has been done, then the subordinate leader or team member is accountable to carry, to execute the current requirements with the current guidance. And I use the term current, meaning that oftentimes authorized requirements are different than current requirements. So that also means that that subordinate leader or subordinate team member is also accountable to notify the senior leader when there's a discrepancy in the guidance or assets. And so this is a, it's kind of a symbiotic relationship there. And I also talk about how a junior person can influence a senior person, because you can't get blood out of a stone, right? So if the guidance and assets are not sufficient to execute to the level that the senior leader expects, the junior leader cannot solve that problem without the senior leader. So that's the organizational reliability model. The execute piece of that model, that the subordinate person is there to execute the guidance and assets, that's what the productive leadership model is about. So the productive leadership model requires that the organization has established its mission, vision, values, and objectives, and that it has provided the assets and guidance required to carry out that leader's responsibilities. So within that, I talk about a leader provided with direction and guidance using leadership roles, attributes, and skills applied through personal and position power to influence others to achieve goals. And that's the productive leadership model.
Got it. So then what have you found in your experience to be the largest obstacle to creating a reliability ecosystem?
Yeah, that's without a doubt, it's accountability. And it's this is really the reason why I wrote the book and why I've been focused so heavily on this. I've been for 15 years, I've been running my business, my consulting business in maintenance reliability. And in recent years, I've done a lot with the leadership side. But when you go into any facility, and I don't care whether it's, and this is also why I developed the models the way I did, it's not, while my background and everything is in maintenance and reliability, these models apply whether it's operations, support, maintenance, whatever. It's because it's all based on human nature and how the human brain works. And, you know, so it doesn't really matter which function we're talking about. But the largest obstacle is by far not having a good system that assigns accountability and then not holding people accountable. And that's why I also, in the productive leadership model, talk a lot about power, sources of power. There's two bases of power, position power and personal power. And if you're in a leadership role, you must have position power. You must have the ultimate legitimate authority to force people to do things in compliance with policies, plans, processes, procedures, and measures. That shouldn't be your go-to move, though. You should develop your personal power, which is power that's given to you by others based on your reference or your expertise. And by reference, I mean how you treat other people, your judgment, your trustworthiness. If you increase your personal power, then it's much easier to ask people to do things and hold them accountable. But at the end of the day, if you must use position power to force compliance, then you must have the fortitude to do that.
All right, awesome. So then can you talk a little bit more, Tom, about some of the methods that are used to assess those strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the organizational reliability model, there's from external to the organization, there are opportunities and threats. And so those might be things like changes in regulations, technological advancements that maybe you need to bring into your organization so that you can produce more at lower cost. Whatever is going on in the outside environment, those are the opportunities and threats. Strengths and weaknesses are things that are from internal. So your how you execute, how you convert inputs to outputs, how you carry out the guidance with the assets that you have. That's how you identify strengths and weaknesses. So both the opportunities and threats and strengths and weaknesses go into that assess piece. So within the assess piece, it's just like you might expect it to be. It's the organization should come up with a criticality or a prioritization process so that each of these opportunities and threats and strengths and weaknesses come into that assess piece. And based on your mission, vision, values, and objectives, you look at the criticality, you set up your criticality criteria so that each one of them goes into that process. You then prioritize them based on criticality. And now, once you have that list, the organization has limited resources, right? So you only have so much personnel hours and money. So which of the top one of those, the ones with the greatest return on investment, which ones make sense to then define a solution for?
All right. So all of that being said, changing gears a little bit on you, Tom. So I've heard about the team effectiveness and motivation survey. So would you mind explaining the purpose of the survey and maybe who could benefit from taking it?
Oh yeah, great. So in 2015, I write a monthly column in Plant Services Magazine. I've been doing that for nearly 11 years now. Back in 2015, I approached them and asked if they would co-sponsor a leadership survey, and they were enthusiastic about it. So I put together the Team Effectiveness and Motivation Survey, which it's comprised of three components. The first is demographics. So we're looking there for what level of leadership are you? And we basically break it down to senior manager, manager, supervisor, and team member. So within that, we also look at things like how long have you been in your current position, how long have you been in the organization, et cetera. In addition, how much leadership training have you had, how frequently do you get it, and so forth, right? So we're picking up a lot of demographic information. The team effectiveness portion of the survey is really about a leader and their direct reports, and it's looking at what the leader believes about their team and what the team believes about the team. And it's interesting, there's about 20 questions and it breaks it down into five different areas. The areas are things like team norms, communication, and so forth. And those things, they can show some very big disconnects. For instance, when I did the survey with Plant Services, the top three things that got the highest scores for the team members, two out of those three were the lowest scored for the supervisor. So that indicates a huge disconnect between what the supervisor believes and what the team member believes. The third element is a thing called motivation, or I use a thing called the expectancy theory to calculate that. And it's just a very rough relative number that you can calculate on a person's level of motivation. And what we do there is we compare that with some of the demographic information, and what came out of the survey was that clearly leaders that got leadership training at every 2 to 3 years or more frequently had above average motivation scores, where leaders that got less than that, say once every 5 years or never, their motivation scores were much lower. And it was pretty much a direct correlation. Then there was some other things that we picked out of that as well. But in my book, in the appendix, I broke down all three of those elements of the team effectiveness and motivation survey so people can create their own. Or, I can be contacted. I have the data from the plant services survey, so we can do some benchmarking, and it would be useful that way.
All right, that's awesome. So then, Tom, if someone approached you in an elevator and asked how they could create a successful reliability ecosystem, and you only had no pressure until the next floor to respond, what would your response be?
Well, my first response would be to hit the button to freeze the elevator. my second response would then be, to create any kind of an ecosystem, any kind of a organizational structure or performance parameter that you want to achieve, you have to have accountability, and you need a system that assigns accountability. Then you need to train people on how to carry out their accountabilities.
There we go. Short and sweet. Perfect. So before we wrap things up for today, Tom, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would love it if folks would buy my book, but I'm also available for doing consultations and for doing workshops. I do a two-day workshop on productive leadership, and I also offer, in conjunction with that, a half-day workshop for the managers that the people that attend the two-day training report to. My idea there is that I want to sensitize the more senior leaders on how to hold the people that went through the two-day training accountable to use the things that they learned.
Awesome. And so for any listeners out there, if you're interested in contacting Tom, feel free to scroll down a little bit on this page with the interview, and you'll see a link through to his website, which will have his contact information, or you can contact us just by commenting on this piece of content, and we'll connect you with Tom pretty swiftly there. But thank you so much, Tom, for taking the time today to talk to us. And we're definitely looking forward to catching back up with you in the future again, too.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And one last thing I'll say is I write those articles in Plant Services monthly. So after 11 years, sometimes the well runs a little dry. So if anybody has ideas for articles or a situation in your facility you'd like me to address, please let me know.
Definitely. And everyone that's listening, comment your thoughts on that below, and we'll definitely pass those thoughts along to you, Tom. Thank you so much.
Outstanding. Thanks, Paige.